Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 228, recorded November 17th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello, hello.
So who have we got lined up for today?
Tony in New York and Matt in Australia.
In?
Perth, Australia.
Okay.
Yeah, what? I don't know. How many Matts in Australia do we hear from?
It's okay.
If it were a different Matt, I would specify.
Okay. Well, let's start with Tony then.
Okay. He says, just a quick mention, looks like 226 did not make it to the website, which, yeah, you kind of
it hadn't. And
found that.
Jeremiah also mentioned that at about the same time Tony did. Mm-hmm. They both brought that up. Thank you again for mentioning that. Once in a while, I just don't toggle the right toggles. I don't, you know, push that last button. And I think I did. And then I hear about it later. And it's a good thing I do, because then I fix it. So
it should be up now.
The last couple of weeks have been a little weird, because you didn't get a podcast for a week and a half, and then you got two within a couple of days. So sorry about that.
It's a little bit weird, but...
But they're all there now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh!
What?
Hmm. What? Maybe I should say that now. Maybe I should say it later. Anyway,
well,
I got
now
some
you
news.
Have to say it now.
I've been in communication with the iTunes people, and I finally figured out why we're not getting the podcasts showing up if you do a search for aquariums.
Why?
I need to put it in the description and titles. Every title and every description has to have the word aquarium in it. And then it will work. So I'm going to start doing that.
The letters are in Aquarimax.
Well, it doesn't
count.
No,
huh?
But I'll get it. I'll get it done.
Okay.
Now
well,
I know how to fix
that.
It, so that should start showing up
soon.
At least
they finally gave you an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Tony says, listened to 227, though, and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was also fun to hear that there are other fans of the gecko listening to the show. How exciting. I've been getting more excited about herps lately. My early favorite is the Chinese firebelly newt. They're so adorable.
They are indeed.
Mm-hmm.
I had some years ago.
Have more to learn. Trying to figure out if I could add a newt tank to the automatic water change system in my upcoming fish room. We'll keep you posted. The basement fish room is still just a daydream for now. Upcoming fish room is this different than the basement one? Are you installing a fish room right now? That's exciting.
Well, I think when he's saying his upcoming fish room and the basement fish room, he's talking about both of them being a daydream, the same thing.
Oh,
but that's
okay.
What he wants to do eventually.
Yeah, that would be neat, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds fun. Yeah, there are some things to think about when you're getting amphibians, aquatic amphibians, and putting in the same water system with fish. One of them being that some of them do produce toxins that can be dangerous to fish. So that's maybe one of the considerations he's thinking about.
And the firebelly newts?
As I understand it, they can produce some toxins, which is why they have firebellies. It's the posematic coloration.
It's kind of like firebelly toads.
Yes, they're... basically advertising their toxicity.
Okay.
Yes. So
automatic water change system, would all the same water be going into all the same tanks?
Not necessarily. There are different ways to do that. So he could, it depends on how it's plumbed. They can be plumbed individually, and they can all go into the same drain if it's the water's just going out, right?
And then fill it individually.
And then fill, you know, you can have one pipe come in and then it separates into subpipes to fill, and then they all go into the same drain. But as long as the water's not recirculating,
it should be fine.
A problem. But then there are others where all the water goes to a main filter, you know, like a very large capacity,
like a
trickle
really big
filter,
sump
something like
or
that.
Something.
Yes. And then that water, once it's purified, goes back into the tanks, and that one could pose potentially problems.
That seems scarier to me, because even if you have something, you know, not toxic species, but just diseases,
right? Well,
the mycobacterium.
There are things to do with that. You can run the water inline through inline UV sterilizer.
I guess that's true.
Things like that to help. But that is a valid concern that you bring up. Anyway, I suppose
all
that's
your
a
water changes in one basket. Sorry, that was bad. It usually is with me though. You guys love me, anyways.
Well, thank you, Tony from New York. Oh, by the way, thank you again, Tony, for the Aquarimax quiz, your videos of the Aquarimax World Tour. Turns out that they were pretty popular on Facebook. One of the most popular things that we've had on the Aquarimax Facebook page in some time.
So people liked it.
Yeah, people liked it a lot. A lot of people checked it out. And so thank you. That helped boost our page views for the week. And
if anybody else wants to send in a quiz or, you know, a leg of the tour,
yeah,
feel free.
That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we go to Matt.
Yeah,
okay.
Matt in...
Matt says, I have a request. Oh.
Before he does that, he says...
Oh, he says, g'day, Claire Max.
Yeah, you gotta read that.
I know, I just... I don't say it right, and so then I feel silly.
Okay, well...
I'll try to work on the accent. Okay.
Okay, so he says...
When you talk about me, please say I'm from Perth, Western Australia. See, which I totally didn't do at the beginning of this podcast, because I hadn't read this yet, because you're the only Matt in Australia. Well, I mean, you're not the only Matt in Australia, but for us, you're the only Matt in Australia. He says, Australia is roughly the same size as the United States, so saying I'm from Perth, Australia is like saying you were from Boston, America. Not at all accurate. Kelly got it right in the last podcast, but a few before that has been Perth, Australia. It is further complicated, in fact, that there are actually two Perths in Australia. The other one is in Tasmania.
Yeah, so it totally makes sense.
That's just me being lazy with the syllables. I'm sorry.
But in the future.
I'll try to get off of my lazy duff and say the whole thing. I guess because I'm ridiculously informal and I figure by now everybody knows who you are.
Yeah, but we can say Western Australia.
Like, I don't ever say UK anymore when I'm talking about Mick. It's just Mick from Carnivore.
We have established that there's only one
Carnivore. There's only one, that's true, and there are two Perths.
There are two Perths, and there are actually more than two Perths, because there are Perths in other places of the world other than that's Australia, true. Too. So we should say Perth, Western Australia.
Okay, I'll try. So I have two questions for the next podcast. My plants in my Discus aquarium have been getting holes in their leaves, and I'm not sure why. I don't think bristlenose catfish eat plant leaves, but I could be wrong. Maybe I need to supplement their diet with some algae wafers? I also have a suspicion that there might not be enough nutrients in the gravel with only 10 fish in total in the tank. I am trying Flourish Excel for a few weeks to see if that helps. Why do you think my plants are getting holes in their leaves?
Okay, well, that is a lovely question. Pretty complex one to answer, but I can't answer it yet. But I can give you some ideas, and I can give you some directions to look into. Let's start out with this. Which plants are getting holes in the leaves? Are all the plants in your tank getting holes in the leaves, or only certain species? Because that could help us narrow things down. Are on the plants that are getting holes in the leaves, are they only the older leaves on the plants, or the younger, newer leaves that are coming out? And also, are you getting old, are there old leaves and perfectly healthy young leaves on the plants, or are there all the leaves looking a little bit worse for wear? Those are some things to think about. Are there any signs of discoloration going on? Are there discolored areas around the spots that are around the holes in the leaves? Does it look like it's being worn away? Those are some things to think about. In terms of the substrate, remind us what your substrate is composed of. I think you may have told us in the past, I'm not sure. But if it's just gravel, if it's not like a nutrient-based plant, nutrient-rich substrate intended for plant growth, that could help us narrow things down. Are you injecting CO2? I know with Discus a lot of people do that, but they don't always do it, and that could help us to get an idea. Also, besides the Flourish Excel, are you supplementing with anything else? So that should kind of get a start going, I guess. Excel will probably help with plant growth in a general way, but if there's a nutrient deficiency in, say, potassium or iron or something, you know, like that, or maybe a micronutrient, we might want to look at some other types of supplementation, especially if you don't have that kind of thing coming from the substrate. Because Excel, while it is helpful for plant growth in general, it won't correct a nutrient deficiency, because if something else is a limiting factor, then it can't really make up for that. But if you were to put, for example, the Flourish comprehensive plant supplement in, then you'd be adding a lot of nutrients, a wide spectrum of beneficial nutrients, and might be able to help compensate for that deficiency. Or you might want to go a more direct route depending on which nutrients you find might be lacking. So if you can answer those questions about the plants and the leaves and the nutrients that you're dosing, if any, besides the Excel, then we may be able to help a little bit more. But let's go to the bristlenose factor there. How many bristlenoses do you have in that tank? Because while bristlenoses are usually safe with plants as long as they're getting enough to eat and there aren't too many bristlenoses, if you get too many bristlenoses and not enough algae and other things to eat, you will get cases where they will be gnawing on the plants looking for nutrients, and they will occasionally cause problems with the plants. And if you have enough in there, they will just do that. There is very little you can do about it. I mean, supplementation of their diet will help, but it probably won't be enough to alleviate the problem entirely if there are a certain, you know, you reach a critical mass of bristlenoses, and that's, you'd have an issue there. Also, okay, sorry, we had a little interruption because there's some construction or something going on nearby, and we didn't know what it was. So, sorry about that.
It's really loud, so hopefully you guys aren't hearing it.
Yeah, I hope you don't have to deal with it. Anyway, we were talking about the bristlenoses. They will chew on plants if there are enough of them in there. And you could definitely supplement, I would supplement their diet with some algae wafers, maybe some canned low-sodium green beans, some blanched zucchini, you know, the frozen peas that have been shelled, that kind of thing. And that will help. And then just if you've got a whole bunch in there, I mean, if the discus would probably be picking off the fry if they start reproducing a lot in there, but just review and, you know, consider the number you have in there. Maybe there are too many, possibly. But those are some things to start going on, and that may help. Hope so. Let us know what you find out, and in terms of those questions we had for you, and maybe we can zero in on the issue a little bit more.
Pictures are always good, right?
Yeah. That would be helpful.
Okay. So his next question, he says, when I walk along the beach at night, I sometimes find bioluminescent algae washed up on the shore. These are the kind that luminesce in response to water agitation. I was wondering if it would be possible to keep a jar of this marvelous algae alive at home and bring it out when we go outside to sit and look at the stars. It would be so much fun to have a jar that would fluoresce as you run your fingers through the water. Do you think it is possible? And if so, do you have any advice on how to create such a jar?
Okay. Well, short answer is, yes, it is possible.
It's really pretty cool.
And I'm glad you brought this up because I am fascinated by bioluminescence, as many people are. It's something I've always gotten a kick out of, and I've looked into this a bit. Some months ago, I stumbled upon a Kickstarter project that related to this, in fact. And I'm going to share the website with you all here.
We'll put it up on the page.
Well, yeah, and I think actually the Kickstarter one is there, and you can look it up on Kickstarter if you want. You can look up the words Dino Pet on Kickstarter, or you can just go to biopop.com/products/dino-pet, and that will get you there. And people actually sell these. They're producing I think it's a polycarbonate sort of an aquarium, for lack of a better word. It's not exactly
an aquarium. But it's shaped vaguely like a sauropod.
Yeah, it's like a sauropod dinosaur without a tail. And it's kind of like a piggy bank, and then it has a little opening at the bottom that you can seal. And what they do is they put these dinoflagellates, or dinoflagellates, depending on how you want to pronounce them, which are the microorganisms that fluoresce in the water, or I guess they phosphoresce, they're bioluminescent, in the water. And those are what we're talking about, basically. What Matt in Western Australia is seeing.
This particular company just sells it in this cute little shape so that it looks like a glowing dinosaur that, I don't know, if you want to use it for a kid nightlight or something, but it's the same stuff that they sell to you, the same, you know, fluorescing, phosphorescing critters that live in it,
basically. Yes, yes. There are various types of dinoflagellates that emit light, and some of them are toxic, some of them are not. This one that they use is not toxic, and it's kind of neat. This dinosaur-looking thing made out of plastic will continue to glow for several months as long as you keep it in the correct situation. And it mentions that you should keep it between about 65 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit, that you should allow it to be in the dark during the night and in the light during the daytime, in indirect light, like from a window, or under a low wattage fluorescent bulb.
Does it need UV?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Just it doesn't whatever light.
Right. Well, no, I wouldn't say whatever light. Probably you want to get close to, well, it being a dinoflagellate, that's a good question. The spectrum, I would probably shoot for somewhere between 6,700K and 10,000K, rather than like a, you know, on the lower end of the spectrum, somewhere in there. But it appears to be pretty pretty hardy, and it can be renewed. They sell renewal packs. Essentially, you're subculturing it. You remove some of the fluid from the container and add new fresh salt water with nutrients in it, and it'll keep going indefinitely as long as you continue to do that and take care of it. Very interesting thing. Unfortunately, it says on the site that although they ship to various countries now, they ship to the US, Canada, France, and the UK, they are still working on getting clearance for other international destinations. And if you want to sign up, and they'll let you know as soon as the DinoPet is available in your country, so you can do that. We'll put the link on the website. That's kind of fun. But I also have something else for you, because that is a bit steep in price.
They're kind of expensive. Yeah. Are we allowed to say how much, or do they have to go look it up on the website a company? I don't know.
I don't know. I think we're allowed to say. It's
like $60.
It's just under $60, and with the shipping and stuff, I don't know if there's a different fee. I didn't check that, but that's kind of expensive, I imagine. But you can get them other ways. I found out that the species, the exact same species that they keep, is available in other places. There's a place called the Ocean Research and Conservation Association in Florida that produces a document that I will put the link to the document on the website as well. And the document is called Bioluminescent Dinoflagellates Growing and Experimenting for Advanced Students. And it's got on this document the contact information, including email, for a company that sells dinoflagellates cheap. And I don't know with the shipping and everything, but you can get a small starter culture for about $6. Not bad. And I don't know, I should give my disclaimer, I don't know when this document came out. It came out recently enough so that an email was included in the contact information, so we know it's not super old, but it could be.
We could email them and see if they're still around.
Could be 10 or 15 years old, as far as we know, you know. I don't know how old the document is. I was just kind of poking around and found this. But anyway, the scientific name of the dinoflagellate that both this website and the DinoPet talks about is Pyrocystis fusiformis. And that name refers to their shape, their spindle-like shape, and their pyro is for fire, and cystis is for cell. So they're spindle-shaped fire cells, as the document indicates here. And it talks about how you can use seawater as the culture medium, that you need to pasteurize it. And it talks about a type of fertilizer for algae that you can give it, and it gives some information about how to use that. So essentially, it explains what you need to do to care for them. And it looks like a cheaper route to go. Now, I do recognize that in Western Australia, where Matt is, these sources may not be viable, because it's difficult to get living things in and out of Australia. There are certain things you can do, I guess, but a lot of things are tightly regulated. So that may not be a viable option, but I would suggest that possibly the fertilizer would be something that you could get. That sounds like that would be easier to import. And it's a specific fertilizer for algae. And then you could probably do some experimentation with collecting your own. I don't know in terms of what species you would get and whether or not you would get pure culture. It sounds like there is some necessity to get to keep the culture pure, because if you contaminate it with other species, you might have difficulties. That's true with culturing a lot of microorganisms, of course. But it doesn't sound that difficult. And here's an interesting thing. I would love to try it sometime, and I might, but instead of stirring the liquid, you know, the seawater with the microorganisms in it with your fingers, the ones that I've read about just say shake the container, and that agitates it well enough and it really glows, and it actually shows that happening. For example, on the video, the first website we met, the BioPop website, it shows someone actually filling a container with the organisms, and it shows them fluorescing as they're pouring it in. And I believe it shows them shaking it too, and that it just fluoresces when they shake it. So it's kind of fun. So I guess the short answer is yes, and the long answer is yes, and here are some ideas on how to do it. Hopefully one of those might be possible in your area, and if hopefully they have people. You might look into biological supply houses and so on somewhere in Australia that culture pure cultures of one of the dinoflagellates that they're talking about. So I think it's fascinating. I'm glad you brought it up, and I hope that you are able to try it. I hope lots of aquariumaxers try it, and I hope we try it someday. That would be really fun. All right. Well, I think that's about it for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
So, thank you to Tony in New York. Thank you to Matt in Perth, Western Australia. And may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that can be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.